Okay, welcome to the Night Party Roundtable discussion. I'm Thomas Robb.
Thanks, Rob.
Rachel Pendergraft.
And today is July
3rd.
July 3rd.
Tomorrow is Independence Day, 4th of July.
4th of July. And all the 4th of July always falls on the same day, every year.
On the 4th.
Always falls on the 4th.
Absolutely.
Pretty amazing.
It is.
So what's going on in your life, Jason?
Well, we've been watching some fireworks around here in the Ozarks, so it's always nice.
Yeah.
Watch the College of the Ozarks fireworks last week.
Correct.
And Harrison has theirs tomorrow. And we may go to it. We're not sure. And it's kind of a three-day weekend. I don't work tomorrow, which is nice.
I think you should work.
Yeah, I probably should.
Yeah.
But it's a way to honor our forefathers and foremothers.
But you can go to work and honor them by working and say, you know, they have allowed me this opportunity to work and provide in the free market.
That is true. But with a free market, you have a decision whether or not you want to work.
I see.
In a free market. And well, I'm choosing not to work in the free market on Monday.
You decide not to work.
Right.
Okay. And our office will be closed tomorrow, too, on Monday.
Well, that'll be good for the staff to spend time with their own family members.
Yeah.
And
although Eugene says he's going to cut grass because we have some reporters coming in Wednesday. And so he said he's going to cut grass. Oh, you don't need to cut grass on the 4th of July. Well, it needs to be cut, so I'm going to do it. So,
well, it's, I mean, the thing is, when the grass is always growing,
the grass doesn't stop growing on the 4th.
Yeah, that's why it's be cut. It's not that hard. You're going to get on the riding lawnmower.
It's a riding lawnmower. So
which is nice.
Yeah.
Hopefully it just doesn't rain, because it rained yesterday, Saturday, it rained a little bit Friday, raining a little bit today, and supposedly it's going to rain tomorrow too. But anyway, yeah, you constantly have to cut grass. Well,
Thursday, we had power outages in the area.
Yep, so, big storm went through.
Well, I hope the grass or the rain continues, at least off and on, because we've had many years where the rain will stop, and then by the time we have Congress, the ground and grass is so dry, we weren't able to do a cross-legging.
Right.
And, you know, because we're under a burn ban. And when you're under a burn ban, you have to, you know, be a good, responsible citizen and obey the burn ban.
Exactly.
We wouldn't want the newspaper to have, you know, we don't want to be a headline newspaper that Klan burns down Boone County.
Right. Yeah, that would not be good.
No, so...
But, yeah, of course, you mentioned the reporters coming in Wednesday. Anymore, I kind of lose track on which media is coming and which one's going and which one you guys are talking to on the phone or whatever, because there's so many that's constantly calling in new reports.
Yeah, I mean, we're dealing with a couple right now. I mean, but one that called yesterday or... When was it? Yesterday? Friday? Yeah,
no, it was
Thursday.
Friday, right.
Thursday. Called Thursday, I think it was. They want to do a story and involve us. And, you know, they may do it, so you'll probably see it out in television sometime this, you know, early fall or something. But about the Klan, and they want to involve us. But the storyline was not appropriate, and so we turned them down, and we
do turn down media interviews. You know?
Yes,
I mean if we know if it's just to try to make fun, or it's just a comedy thing, or it just it's almost like a Jerry Springer type of show,
or just too intrusive.
Right,
they want to follow you around, be there when you wake up in the morning.
Yeah, hello, yeah. Good morning. Yeah. You're on TV.
As they're walking to the show.
I want to put my Klan robe on as I walk to the show.
Yeah, exactly.
And people were laughing, but I've actually seen stuff like that.
Right.
You know? I remember years ago, some gal was on the old Jesse Sully Raphael show, and she was saying, "I wear my Klan robe when I go shopping." Really? Anyway, I don't know if she really did or not, but she was bragging about it on TV. And she wears a Klan robe when she goes shopping. So
amazing.
The judges there at the courthouse, Jason, do they wear the judges' robes and they go shopping?
They don't. I haven't seen one yet.
What do they do with those robes?
When they get off the bench, they go in their office, they immediately take it off.
They take it off.
Yeah, they don't even walk around unbuttoned or anything like
in
that.
In courthouse.
They take it off immediately.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
the symbols, respect, you know, but yeah. It's not like they're enjoying just walking around with a robe. You know, I mean, it's funny.
We turned down that network, so I don't know what they'll do.
We've got I don't know what their actual news agency is. It's a TV station from South Africa. They were going to do something in April and then in June, but the last minute he got put over on the Brexit story in Britain on the leaving the EU. So we had to cancel at the last moment, but he's wanting to come out on August 12th and go ahead and do the story.
Well, the thing is, like we've just been saying, we don't, every time a reporter calls, we don't necessarily do a story with them. News story, of course, is a different deal than those right. who are trying to build a storyline. Like A&E or Discovery or one of those channels where they might do a feature story.
Right.
That's where a regular news story is a little different. We'll do, you know, a news reporter doing a story, you know, an issue. And
yeah, what's your opinion on this?
Yeah, that's different. But those who are trying to do a feature story and wrap a whole storyline around their own creation that they created in their studio.
Right.
And then just trying to get people to fill in the pieces,
yeah.
fill in the puzzle, then it's a different story. And we don't only turn them down all the time, but we turn them down a goodly number.
Yeah.
And we've done a few that turned out pretty good. I thought the one, United Shades of America, came out okay. Mm-hmm. And even that didn't come out the way we originally understood, because it was supposed to be a standalone story. And then it somehow got shelved for almost 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then it came back out, and they compiled it into this feature with Kamu Bell.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's his name. But it came out pretty good. You know, I thought the Knights came out very well, looked very well. Everybody represented themselves well in a dignified manner. And that's our biggest concern, is that we present ourselves in a dignified manner, you know. And not,
yeah, like, I was talking to a couple people at the post office yesterday, and they were mentioning seeing it, and they thought it came out real good.
Yeah. Yeah, I talked to Paul Fromm the other day, and he said they were showing that all over Canada. And he said, every time you turn TV, it was back on again. So he thought it was very well also. So they did a good job on us. And the other people, I don't know, no comment about the other people that they showed, but I suppose they did the best they could with them.
And well, the thing is, in all reality, most of these
there's sincerity and then there's professionalism.
Right.
There's lots of sincere people. There's not very many professional people.
Right, because most of these they're just very recent startup groups. They have no training, political training. They have no training whatsoever, and so they may be frustrated with what they're seeing around them, and they say, I'm going to start a clan group. But that's about it. You know, they're not trained in talking to the media. They're not trained in having an organization. They're not trained in anything. And if you are an attorney, if you're a doctor, if you're a mechanic, whatever profession you are in, you are trained in that.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with the Knights. We are a professional organization. We're the oldest white nationalist organization. So we have been trained, and the leadership has been trained. And so we are very much professionals. And for the most part, most of these other clan groups are not that, because it's something at the night they may do as far as, you know, hang around with a couple of their buddies at their house, you know, but they're not trained. They have no political aspirations or political agendas for their organization. And so they get up there and they get frustrated, and you know, they may say the N-word here and there.
They have a picnic.
Have a picnic. That's it. That's their agenda.
Yeah. Oh, but like you say, they mean well and they're sincere, but unfortunately they often give a really poor image of the Klan. I want to shift gears here. I've got a story that was sent to me about Stormy. Have you ever heard of Stormy?
I've never heard of Stormy.
Stormy is a girl's name.
Right.
But this is a boy named Stormy.
Boy named Stormy. Okay.
A boy named Stormy. Well, he dresses like a little girl. And he's 9 years old.
Okay.
And he in a foster home. I believe the same foster home since he was about 3.
Okay.
So the foster parents who are lesbians, who evidently guided him into this deformed lifestyle.
Right.
Anyway, the story says that he joined the Girl Scouts, and then he wants to sell Girl Scout cookies. I like Girl Scouts. Girl Scout cookies. But now Dollar General store sells the very same thing for like a buck. So a Girl Scout cookie was like, what, $5 or something
right,
like that?
Right.
So I don't know. Lately, if you want a Girl Scout cookie, go to Dollar General store. And they did not pay for this advertising.
Right.
I wish they did. But they did not pay for this advertising. But Dollar General store sells the very same thing.
Yeah.
For like a buck, maybe a buck and a quarter. And they're just as good, probably made by the same company.
Right.
But anyway, Stormy is out selling Girl Scout cookies, knocks on this door, and if you look up Stormy on the website, it looks like a little girl, got a little face paint and so forth, but it's a 9-year-old boy.
Yeah.
And a guy comes to the door, and Stormy, they used to call them sissies, you know, but anyway, he wants some Girl Scout cookies, and the guy comes to the door and says, "Nobody wants to buy Girl Scout cookies from a boy in a dress." And Stormy went crying home.
Oh.
And let me see.
That hateful bigot.
Yeah, the Washington Post refers to him as a bully. I don't know if he tried to bully anything.
Yeah.
Isn't
that the whole idea of a free market?
The kid's parents all be slapped up.
Well, I think he's in foster care.
Oh, that's right. Foster care.
I believe, and I think it was 2 lesbians took him into foster care.
Yeah.
So from about 3 years old. So from 3 to 9, he's been under the degenerate,
propaganda,
deformed, immoral surroundings. And you know, like you say, they should be charged for child abuse. Anyway, the man who would not buy Girl Scout cookies for the boy in a dress, been called a bully, and so Washington Post and others around the country, they all got behind Stormy's efforts, and Stormy sold all his Girl Scout cookies.
Yay!
And so they thought that was like a victory. Aha! Yes. We sold all the Girl Scout cookies. But anyway. This person here, this particular article says, which is has the same thinking as we do, wrote, "This is outrageous. Instead of bemoaning the fact that we live in a society that can produce a 9-year-old queer and railing against the foster parents of this confused child contributing to the delinquency of a minor, the Washington Post celebrated Stormy's courage and spirit in not giving up and making lemonade out of lemons that has been handed to him." So they ask the question, what about the Girl Scouts? They don't even seem to know what a girl is anymore.
Well, the Girl Scouts last year took on the official position of welcoming transgender members.
Yeah.
Into their ranks. So,
isn't that wonderful?
Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts with the allowing queer kids and den leaders and all that and both of these organizations were started out as Christian organizations to help mentor young girls and young boys in becoming well-rounded Christian adult
moral principles.
Help society, help the
country. The YMCA, the Young Christian Men's Association. Which now you say YMCA and all people think of is a bunch of drag queen village people doing their YMCA song.
YMCA.
Yeah.
where all the young boys are.
Right.
Celebrating, you know. Yeah, that's where all the young boys are if you want to hook up.
Yeah, go there.
Which makes me mad. We were talking about 4th of July a few minutes ago, and the last time that I've been actually about 3 or 4 years ago, but they always do like a street dance, you know, after the local radio station does, and it's a big family deal, right. You know, it's a white town, and people have their lawn chairs and stuff like that, and went to that with the kids and stuff, but it made me mad because one of the songs they played was YMCA, and people don't even stop and think about it.
Listen to the lyrics.
You got families out there, and I mean, little kids, and I mean, it's nationwide popular song.
Right.
You put on YMCA, and automatically your arms are in the air, right. And you're doing like the YMCA thing, and nobody even stops to think about it. It's a freaking
fag song,
fag hookup song.
Yeah. You want to have sex with boys?
That's where they're at.
Young kids, go out of YMCA.
Yeah, and it's just like, made me so mad. I was just like, I mean, I wasn't like mad at the people.
Because they don't even know. Yeah, they don't want to stop and actually listen to the words.
I was just mad. There's like a grandma in a wheelchair, and she's got her arms up. There's like little kids out there, you know, and their arms, YMCA, you know, and I was just like, God, people, do you even listen to the lyrics?
Exactly.
You know?
But, yeah, do you even understand what they're saying?
Yeah. But anyway, the poor little Stormy.
Yeah. Well, if she's a cute little girl. A guy?
A guy, girl, girl, yeah. Kid?
Well, Caitlyn Bruce Jenner, she spoke in Las Vegas here about a week ago at... I don't remember the official name of the symposium, but it was a healthcare medical type symposium for physicians and pediatrics for understanding gender dysphoria, which is, you know, your brain confusion of what gender am I? Anyway, and they were talking about... the need to, they were talking about how in your cities and stuff like that, they've already have had in place, well established for the past 20 years, programs in schools with school counselors in elementary schools, trained physicians and pediatrics and all, you know, the good support system for gender dysphoria and so forth. And so their symposium was on how to take that model to help these poor adolescents and move it into the rural area, because the rural area of America is where there's still more of a lean towards conservative values, and how these young people, as young as 3 and 4 years old in Head Start, who are already experiencing gender dysphoria, have no support system, have no one to guide them, you know, into the gender identity of their choosing. And so, you know, they're going to be talking to Congress. They want more money. They want more training in medical school for pediatric physicians to be able to recognize children with gender dysphoria, to help guide them, to put them into different counseling, different programs, to be able to help start them on whatever hormone treatments they need, you know, as soon as they enter puberty. And it's like, come on, it's God.
It's just captured.
Social engineering.
And I, you know, unless you want me to take time to go get it, there was that psychiatrist. If you recall, several months ago, he was like a top-rated psychiatrist, head of the psychology department at one of your major universities. So I mean, this guy really recognized him in years. And he talks about the takeover of the capture of our children by homosexuals, and he says there that like 90% of boys or girls who in that age group 8-9 years old, mm-hmm. who for portion begin to identify with the other gender grow out of it within about 3 years, mm-hmm. you know, and that it's quite often it's he's not saying that most boys, most girls go through that. But what he's saying, about 90% or even higher of those who do go through it naturally grow out of it within about 3 years. And then by 4 or 5 years, almost everyone has grown through that and back to recognition of their proper identity. And so they're capturing these kids when they're at a very young age. And then
they're grooming them to be...
fags.
Yeah, grooming them to be sex partners.
Yeah, and the thing is, like this Stormy, this little boy. I don't know if you pulled it up in there or not. But the thing is, he's got long hair. He's 9 years old, so he's got very soft features, mm-hmm. a young boy has. So the image that you just see, even though it's a boy, that what people are looking at.
Looks like a little
They girl. Look like a poor little girl who's crying and unhappy and sad. And people naturally are going out and feeling sympathy and compassion for the in their mind, this little girl that's being bullied. Not really, it's not a little girl, it's a boy, you know, and he's been groomed and deformed, spiritually and morally deformed, to begin to accept this other identity. And left alone, if he's moving to a regular family, left alone, he may grow out of it within that a couple of years.
Yeah.
But he's not being allowed to grow out of it. He's being elevated and glamorized and recognized as courageous. So he may be trapped in it for the rest of his life.
I'm pulling that up. I guess that's Stormy.
Well, that's not the picture I saw, but yeah, that probably is. That's not the picture I saw, but that kind of looks like the person I saw. It looks like a little girl. And if that little person come to you, not known as a boy, and it was crying and unhappy, you have compassion for this poor little girl who's being bullied.
Well, the thing is, I mean, kids are not mature. Kids are still growing and they're still developing. And when you get them at a very early age and you have adults that are intentionally manipulating a child's development and basically saying, oh, you're a girl, you're confused, you know, that is abuse. Now, they always talk about abuse when white Christians are trying to raise children to, you know, love the Lord and have love for their race. Now, they always talk about, oh, that's abuse, you know. You know, well, if you won't follow that path, well, what about this? When you're intentionally telling a child while they're developing that you're not that sex. You're a girl. You're not a boy. You know, or vice versa.
Right.
Yeah, it's a...
And it's a big project. And people are totally... There's a program on TV.
Very wicked.
You know, am I a boy or am I a girl?
Yeah.
And then there's the transgender project. Then you got people being glamorized, like Bruce Jenner, who now, I guess, is going to pose in Sports Illustrated. Ugh. You know? And
then she or he or whatever you want to call Bruce or whatever name or his name is now says now he's not going through with it. I read something where he said that he decided he's not going to follow through with the transition, that he has decided he is a man.
Now he decided he's a man?
Yeah, I actually read about a week ago.
So he has...
Now I read something subsequent to that where he said that people misinterpreted his comments.
Okay, well, maybe that's what it was.
So, but I don't...
Maybe he hasn't decided. It's all messed up.
So we're confused.
We're confused.
We're confused.
Yeah.
Bruce Jenner's got it straight. We're confused.
We're just gender, identity, information confused.
Yeah.
Even if he would decide, okay, I really am a man, I still think he's messed up.
Right.
He's still messed up. Even if he's not
one of the 12 men. You know, they take an actual real medical issue of hermaphrodites, who are people with both sex parts, which is a very, very rare thing, but common enough that they do have surgery options and things like that, and they take you know, here about 30 years ago they would always, almost as a rule, always take hermaphrodite babies, and they would make them female, so because I guess it's easier to cut off the protruding parts.
Yeah.
And anyway, so they would always make the babies into females. And then, of course, those children reach puberty, and they might be a girl on the outside, but they still have the testosterone and the boy stuff on the inside, and so they would become obviously very confused. They took that issue, which is rare but does happen enough, they took that issue and used that as a platform for saying, well, it's also brain function too. It's also, people don't just aren't just born with both parts. They also have, you know, male and female circuitry messed up in their brain, and they're intersexed in their brain, and this and that, and use that as a platform, because all the research and study that I've done on all the intersex and gender dysphoria and all that stuff all comes out of an actual fact of hermaphrodite babies, which is rare, but does happen enough that they have specialists who deal just with that. And then the idea and the concept here in the last 10 or 15 years is, don't do anything with these babies. Wait till they reach puberty, and basically whatever hormones
kicks in
and takes over, then allow that child at that time to, well, yeah, I feel more like a boy, or hey, I feel like a woman, you know, type deal. And then have corrective surgery then, because trying to force an anatomy on a baby and a child and make them dress like a girl for 10 years, and then he's a boy at 13 or 14, you know, psychologically, hormonally, and stuff like that, that's a real medical issue. And it's so wicked that they take a medical problem like that and exploit that as a basis to put all children into, who, little tomboys or little boys who would rather color and read books or stuff than go out and climb trees, you know,
right.
The what they think is, you know, this is the masculine behavior. You got to be out playing in the mud.
Because that's what TV promotes idea, too.
Yeah, if you're not out playing toy soldiers, you'd rather be inside.
No, take a sitcom where a little boy wants to play violin and he's not allowed to play football.
Yeah.
Or wants to bake.
Yeah.
You know, there's something wrong with him. Well,
yeah.
No, maybe boy wants to make food, be a chef. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, you know. But they want to make it that if there's something, that if you're not in the social construct, whatever it's going to be, then there's something wrong with you. But it is social engineering.
Right.
You know, and that's what it comes down to, is that they want to basically play with society.
Yeah.
And mess it up, because these individuals, these psychiatrists or liberals, they're very much anti-Christians. They're very much against traditional America, against anything that's biblical based. They're very much anti that. And so anything that they can do to destroy that, they will do that. And part of it is basically trying to destroy the idea that you can have, you know, a Christian society with boys and girls and being raised that way. Instead, now, if a boy wants to be a girl at 5 years old, they have every right to do that. Religion plays no part in it.
What, you want to bake a cake with your mom? Well, you must have gender dysphoria.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You're a little girl and you like to hang out with your dad in the garage while he works on his classic Mustang? Well, you must have gender dysphoria. Yeah. We need to put you into counseling.
Right.
It's...
And it's happening in these public schools.
Oh,
it's happening.
Yeah.
Speaking about public schools, here's a good story I got here. This is students at Blue Camp High School. This is in England. We're given a homework assignment requiring them to explain to their parents they were converting to Islam and expressing their hope for acceptance. So that was a homework assignment.
They're to get their parents' reaction.
Yeah, they're supposed to go home, explain to their mother or dad that they're converting to Islam, and then get the reaction. But then also that is in preparation for this assignment, they were given all the reasons why converting to Islam would be a good thing. So now this is being taught to kids.
So here's your talking points.
Yeah, absolutely. And then they go home, and then they were able to defend their position on why converting to Islam would be a good thing. And Christians were upset about that. Can you imagine?
They must be bigots.
I guess.
You know?
But
converting to Islam is a good thing because I don't have to worry about wearing makeup. My face will be covered all the time.
Yeah. I don't have to dress up.
I saw
garbage bag and poke two holes in there, yeah, and you're ready for the day.
I heard somebody the other day, I don't know who it was, and they said, well, that person needs to put on more of their burqa. Put on more burqa, quick.
Just a little bit more of your eyes.
That was Andrew.
Yeah. Andrew, yeah.
She needs more burqa.
You see some of these, and I got to agree with them. Yeah, they need a little more of that covering on them.
Yeah.
But that's horrible. Again, that's manipulation. Manipulation of children to promote an agenda. And the agenda isn't, I think people fail to understand, the agenda isn't what looks like the agenda. The agenda is to destroy Christianity.
Right.
The agenda is not to promote Islam. The agenda is not to promote transgenderism. The agenda is to destroy Christianity.
Right.
That's the agenda. And yeah, these are just tools and ways of manipulation to cause confusion in society and to lower our standards and broaden our tolerance to accept every type of perversion as the norm.
Well, that's why in college, really since the 60s, you've had, I mean, not everyone, because I never had to go through it, but your major universities, they had what's called your situational ethics.
Right.
Where it all depends on the individual, how they react to a situation that could be catastrophic, you know. But it depends on them. So there's no right or wrong. It just depends on what you feel.
Right.
And so, again, that is a form of destroying Christianity, because Christianity, there are set rules, negative and positive about everything as far as living, how you live your life, how you treat people, just everything. You know,
whether a murder, if you're a murderer, right, it's capital punishment, not, well, he was had a bad life. Well, that's too bad, but, you know.
Right. And so, there is a way you live as a Christian, but if you destroy that, then it just depends on how you face each individual situation.
Right, yeah.
You know, and that's what situation ethics is all about. You know, and but again, that's kind of form of telling kid, hey, now you're going to defend this, Islam, the religion, instead of saying, no, I'm not. You know, but it's, again, they want to destroy Christianity, and that's how
they want no righteous standard to go by and to live by. And a nation needs rules are important. I mean, can you imagine if you walked to the McDonald's and ordered a hamburger and said, well, this all tastes like McDonald's hamburger. And they said, well, no, in our town, we have our own rules for making hamburgers. I mean, rules are very important, and we find that in a simple explanation of McDonald's hamburgers. You go to McDonald's hamburger in Harrison, and you can drive all the way to Washington, D.C., or you can drive to Oregon, and you go and buy a McDonald's hamburger, it's going to taste exactly the same way. And that's a comforting rule. Because when you're on a trip and they say, I want a McDonald's, Daddy, they know what you're going to get. And you know what you're going to get. And if you go there and you don't get that, you're going to have some unhappy kids. So rules are very important in our society and in life. And we as a people are a people based upon rules and discipline and order. That's part of our identity and part of our makeup. And whether it's making hamburgers or whether it's construction our society and law enforcement in our neighborhoods or schools, we set up a certain discipline and standard we go by. And what we have happening now is the destruction of all rules and all discipline. So there is nothing structured in society that allows it to build itself from one generation to another generation. And so Christianity is the great glue that holds all this together. And that's why Christianity, it needs to be destroyed in their mind. You don't find them attacking Islam. You don't find them the same hatred for any of the other Eastern religions. But there is a extreme hatred for Christianity and anything Christian.
Well, that's you know, of course, talking about, you know, having children go and try to defend that. Was it in that article, did they talk about any outcome from that? I mean, do they talk about, did the parents get upset and go to the school and the school board and question this, or does the article follow up? I know when I've seen stuff similar to that on Facebook, or when I'm doing articles or something like that, I will see where parents obviously get upset and they'll go to the school board, complain about it, you know, and then a lot of times the assignments obviously are not given to the parents ahead of time. So the parents just have no idea until that day when it's given to the students. But usually the schools will back away and say, well, it's just a assignment that the teacher wanted, and they quickly kind of dispel that.
Well, the article just simply said the parents were outraged, but they don't say what happened. Probably because the parents were victorious.
Right.
And they don't want a victory be printed in the newspaper.
Right.
You know, because then it tells other parents, hey, if I get outraged, I can stop it too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I'm going to suggest, based upon what I see in this article, that the parents did shut it down. But again, if it was printed, the parents shut it down, then that would encourage other parents to become outraged.
Right.
Because nothing feels, nothing creates enthusiasm or fortitude or whatever is knowing that you're on a winning team. But if you think that they lost, then, if they would say, well, the parents lost, then they'll advertise that, because then that'll discourage people saying, no use even trying, because you're wasting your time, you're going to lose anyway. So I'm going to suggest that the parents would succeed in their effort to stop that. And I don't know if that was an assignment from the school administration or just a local teacher. Probably just a teacher, but maybe not. You don't know.
Well, right. they do the same thing with guns. You get some gun accident somewhere, and it's like nationwide news for a week, like nonstop. All this, parents weren't home, kids got into the gun rack, got a gun out, killed one, to eat, you know, whatever, blah blah blah. You know, nationwide news. You have people that save their families or stop a would-be rape. Or
sometimes children.
Yeah, a home invasion. You have all these type of stories, and nothing in the news, but maybe a blip here, a blip there. You might see it, you know, on a, you know, an NRA website or something that's, you know, pro-gun or self-defense. You might find it there, but as far as like a nationwide, you know, story being broadcast everywhere, you never hear anything about that.
No.
Like that new, there's a new ad on the radio I hear all the time. I think it's being promoted by, they call it, you know, the Gun Safety Association or something like that, and the Ad Council, but it's like three or four kids' voices talking. You've probably heard it. And the first off, it starts with a girl. She sounds like she's maybe like 13. She's like, I heard a story the other day. These kids were at home, and one of them went and got their dad's gun out, and they were playing with it, and then they shot and killed their best friend. And then a boy comes on, again, like a teenager. I heard a story the other day, and this girl, she was being bullied at school, and she went home, and she got her grandpa's gun, and she shot herself. And there's like three or four stories like that of just like horrific like gun things, you know? And then the adult comes on, and he's like, these are very real accidents that came about because guns were not properly stored. Remember, don't let your child be a victim of gun violence or gun accidents. Keep your gun locked away
keep the key for the safe somewhere else, you know, blah, 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 like that. This ad provided by the Ad Council and the Association for Gun Safety. It doesn't say it's against guns. If just like
gun violence.
Yeah, it's teenagers telling like horror stories about things that they heard on the news of different gun accidents, and then the adult telling parents, you know, okay, this is why you need to keep your gun up and need to keep it locked away and keep it, you know, in out of reach of children and stuff like that. And it's like, okay, what about the teenagers saying, I heard this story the other day, and there were these like blacks that were like trying to break into our house, and my mom went and got the gun and shot them and saved our family, and none of us were murdered or raped. Where are those stories?
Okay, listen, I have to leave. I just got mom just came here and said I've got a phone call. I'm going to have to go take care of that. So I'm going to let you two wrap it up.
We're going to round table ourselves.
We're going to round table.
Yeah. Each other square in the eye.
But right. Yeah, but anyway.
Until next time. Bye.
But yeah, anyway. So, you know, here's this, you know, these teenagers talking about all these horror stories that they've heard. But they don't ever talk about all the times that guns save lives.
Yeah, save lives, yeah.
Yeah, all the time.
There, you know, I always like to talk about this book, but John Lott, he was a, he still is.
University of Chicago, right?
Professor at University of Chicago, Harvard, Yale. I mean, very much
he's got the
intellectual credibility.
Yeah.
And he wrote several books. The one book, and I think it's been revised a couple times, but it's called More Guns, Less Crime. And he took, it was a 10-year period research of all the gun laws of all the counties in the United States using FBI's own statistics. Mm-hmm. So that he didn't use a state statistic. He may have, but mainly it was on the FBI. Mm-hmm. Of the, I think it was like 3,800 counties in the United States. You know, so he took them all. And basically showed that the states that have more guns, more concealed weapon permit holders, that those states have actually less crime, what's called hot crime, which mm-hmm. is rape, robbery, aggravated assault, murder, your hot crimes. And those states actually had less crime. And your states that have stricter gun laws actually have higher, significant higher of your hot crimes. And so he showed that over this 10-year period, that the states where there was more guns, where people was carrying guns, concealed weapon permit holders, more gun friendly, you really was safer in that state, and which is true, because for the most part, criminals are not going to go and try to rape someone. They're not going to rob a store. They're not going to try to do some aggravated assault if they know someone's packing and going to defend themselves.
Right. Yeah.
And so the idea again is they want to just disarm all society, and part of that is just putting fear in the average person that if you see a gun, that gun is just going to jump up and start shooting people.
Yeah.
You know, and it's to instill fear. You know, and if you don't know how to properly handle a gun, something like that, there could be an accident. But that's where there is training. That's why you shouldn't be scared of a gun. Be familiar with it. But ultimately, a gun is an instrument to help protect yourself. Right. That's what it is for.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like Shelby and I, we were going through the ATM at the bank the other day, and she was just laughing because there's a sign on the door of the bank, you know, saying no guns permitted in the bank, or, you know, one of those type of signs or stuff. And she was like, just, you know, talking about how just idiotic that was. It's like, you know, someone's going to come rob the bank. They're like, oh, darn it. I was going to rob this bank, but they won't let me bring my gun in. Darn it. I was going to rob the pizza delivery driver, but they said I can't, you know, have a gun.
Yeah.
I was going to rob this store, but there's a sign on the door that says no guns allowed. Darn it.
A gun safe zone.
Yeah.
We've all seen that.
Oh.
Well, there. If you go on YouTube, there's actual videos making fun of that.
Uh-huh.
Where it shows a robber. He's like going to a bank. He was about to rob the bank, and then the teller points him to a sign that says gun safe zone. And he, like, puts his head down, and he walks out.
Yeah.
And there's another one where this guy, he breaks into an elderly's home.
Uh-huh.
And he's, like, going to the bed of this older lady. I don't know if it's going. He was going to rape her or he was going to, like, rob her or whatever.
Yeah.
And she wakes up and sees the guy with the mask on, and she points up to a sign that she has on her wall that says gun safe zone. Or gun-free zone, excuse me, gun-free zone. And he puts his head down and walks out of the house. You know, it's just making fun of the idea that the gun-free zones or these gun-safe zones, it's just really ridiculous. I mean, what fairy tale are we living in? I mean, people that are going to commit crime, people that are trying to cause harm, they don't care about signs. You know, they don't care about anything like that. But
the only good that the signs do are let the criminals know that, oh, there's no one here to stop you.
Right, exactly, exactly. But they know that if there was a business as individuals are encouraged to carry guns or whatever, they're probably not going to go and rob that store,
right?
You know, or try to cause harm.
Yeah, yeah. But and you know, you watch, you know, movies or TV shows or stuff like that, and it's always like, oh my God, there's a gun in the house. What are we gonna do? Oh my God, I'm not going to have that gun in the house, or you know, just stupid stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
And it just, and it, you know, it scares people because, I mean, if you don't understand how something works and you've been misled into thinking that, you know, a gun is just going to be sitting on the coffee table and all of a sudden it's just going to discharge or something like that, you know, well, you know, then people are going to be scared of it and they're not going to understand it. You know, where it used to be, you know, kids grew up knowing how to handle a weapon. They go hunting or they target practice or, you know, it's just mom, America, apple pie, and guns.
Right. And ultimately, the gun is, for the whole purpose of guns and trying to disarm, you know, the citizens and trying to scare them not owning guns, really the main agenda and the main purpose of that is for individuals, for the civilization and the citizens in the state to not be able to protect itself from a government.
Right.
You know, and that's really the reason why there was the Second Amendment. That's why there was guns are encouraged, is to protect the citizens from the government, because if a government can disarm its citizens, then they can easily more control them.
Right.
And that's the purpose of the Second Amendment. Not so an individual can go out there and shoot a deer and go hunting or even target practice.
Right.
Guns was there to ensure that the government tried to run over them, become a tyrannical type of government, take away their rights, that the citizens could rise up and reclaim
institute,
this government.
Yeah, institute or abolish or institute new government.
Right. You know, Thomas Jefferson and all the founding forefathers was very much aware that when you create a government, it's more easily is going to get out of control.
Right.
And the way you help protect the people is that they have firearms, they have weapons, to take care of themselves and reclaim its rightful ownership and rightful government institutions. And so, but they're not thinking that nowadays. People don't think about that. They just think that, oh, you know, we just need to take our guns away so we can be in a peaceful society and be harmed. And that's not reality.
Right.
You look in England, for example. They don't even have firearms anymore. And now they are trying to get it so they can even have pocket knives.
Yeah.
If there's a certain amount of inch of a knife, is now they're trying to get it be disbanded. And so, the idea is where the people themselves cannot be able to protect themselves from the government. And these hot crime rates in England and Europe are a lot higher than those in the United States.
Well, I read, this was actually a interesting fact in Rolling Stone magazine here about 6 or 7 years ago, but that over, and it seems hard to believe, but anyway, that over 5,000 people a year are killed in the UK from bottles, from being hit over the head with a bottle, stabbed with a broken bottle, I guess maybe a bar fight, just all the different types of ways with a glass bottle. And I thought it seemed, so I did a little, you know, fact checking on it, and yeah, it was like true.
Right.
I was like, really? That just seems odd.
Right.
It was like, you know, 5,000 people, you know, killed from glass bottles.
Yeah. Well, and you're right. You know, you got a glass bottle, that could be a dangerous weapon. You break it and sharp edges.
Yeah.
And so you got a lot, you could be in a fight, or you could have criminals themselves.
It seemed hard to believe. I don't even remember what context it was in Rolling Stone, but it was something. It was something like interesting tidbits or something like that. It didn't even have anything to do with guns or anything like that. It was just like something interesting about the UK and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
I remember reading that. I was like, what?
Well, and the thing is, in the higher non-white population in England, or the higher non-white population in the United States, more of these hate crimes occur.
Yeah.
You can see significant increase in your hate crimes since the 60s, when really non-whites start pouring into the United States.
Yeah.
It just started skyrocketing. The prison population, we had almost an insignificant prison population up into the 50s and 60s. And since that time, now we have millions of people that are in prison in the United States because of these hate crimes. And majority of those are your non-whites, you know. And so the fact is that with these illegals, or not illegals, but just non-whites in general coming in with their own culture, with their own standard of living, it's going to conflict with a white culture and white civilization.
Right. And we're not saying whites don't commit crime.
Well, whites commit crime all the time.
Because you know, society in general and law and order under attack, it degenerates white people also.
Exactly.
And, you know, but, you know, we're talking about
you look at the whole,
the propensity of certain cultures to commit these crimes. And it's, you know, it's terrible. Like, you have the dumbing down of education in schools. You have the dumbing down of morals of white kids. You have the, you know, all these. And so it's like a virus that's infecting the white body as a whole, or our population.
Well, you know, for example, you look at Chicago, who has, I think, like one of the strictest gun laws in the United States. Very high non-white population, and
one of the highest homicides.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. There's like over 120 people that's been killed so far in Chicago just this year alone. It's just outrageous.
And I don't remember the name of the website. I've got it bookmarked at home, but it's like Chicago Homicide Watch.com or something like that. But they've got like a ticker on there. And then they do like a police blotter of like homicides and home invasion calls and things like that. But yeah, they got like a ticker on there that, you know, every time there's a, you know, a homicide and stuff like that. And most of it's black on black.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
But there's also a lot of the homicides, mostly black on black. But the home invasions, where there's like, you know, someone's killed or almost killed or raped or things like that, is usually black on white.
Right.
Because, you know, they're not going to like, if they do a home invasion in a black area, it's usually over drugs. If they're trying to get money or cash or ATM cards or just a thrill kill or rape or something like that, they're usually out in the white area.
Yeah.
Because it's a pleasure trip.
Pleasure trip, absolutely. Yeah, they're not reacting. They're intentionally trying
it's
to go 10 out.
O'clock in the morning. I've had my malt liquor, and I'm bored.
I'm bored. Let's go rape somebody or try
go
to break into the house.
Village and get an ATM card.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So that's why a person, if they had a firearm, would be able to protect themselves, you know.
Yeah.
And but, yeah, it's amazing.
Well, they just need the sign. It's a gun-free
zone. Exactly. They just need to carry that sign. If you have someone going to try to rape them. The woman just needs to pull out her purse and sign that says, gun-free zone or no rape zone.
Yeah, or they could just, or you could start wearing, you know, that's what we could do. We could start selling buttons, you know, like you have campaign buttons. We could have this is a gun-free zone around this little 1 foot area around my body and person is a gun-free zone. And you could just wear his button.
Or no crime person.
Maybe, just
you can't commit crime against me.
Yeah, just wear this button around and then I'll just let people know that, you know, I'm not available to be raped today.
Yeah, you just have to go somewhere. Have to go somewhere else. Go to another victim.
Yeah.
But what's an interesting kind of tidbit? You know, we're talking about just the crimes in your in the United States and in Europe, and we had talked a little bit about, you know, England. Just kind of a side note. I was talking about a week ago in court with a couple other attorneys, and one attorney has a family member that works in the college and stuff like that. And when I was talking to him, he asked about how my trip was over in Europe and England and Scotland and England and Ireland and Scotland, and how it was, how I enjoyed it, you know. And he asked, you know, did I go to England and London area? I said, oh yeah, we really enjoyed that. And he said, he was saying, yeah, he said his brother had been to London probably about 15 years ago. Uh-huh. And he said he recently had gone there about a year or two ago. And he said he was telling me, he said there are parts of London that looks like a third world country, like Pakistan and India. And he said he just couldn't believe it, you know.
Yeah.
And so, of course, we know about this, and I said, well, yeah, I said, that's the main reason why England left the EU.
Right.
Because we were talking about the EU and talking about that's the main reason why England left the EU is because of the immigrants coming in.
Yeah.
And that's when he started talking about his brother had gone there and saying London was just, parts of London didn't even look like London. There were no white people. And then I told him, I said, well, in London, there's 10 schools that don't even have one white freaking kid.
Yeah.
You know? And he was like, his mouth just dropped. He's like, are you serious? I said, yeah. It's basically a non-white city.
Yeah.
You know? And another attorney said, yeah, it's not your monolithic white society like it used to be. You know? And so people are aware of it. They know it, you know?
Yeah.
And they just like to, they hope it'll go away.
Yeah. Well, John Cleese, he's an actor and comedian and stuff like that. And I don't remember in what context it was, but I saw an interview he did. You can probably find it on YouTube. Interview he did about 5-6 years ago. And of course, he's English and so forth. And he was talking about the Muslims coming into London and so forth in England, and he was talking about, he said when his American friends come to visit him in London and in Birmingham and stuff like that, because I think he's got a house there also, Birmingham in England, for those that know, I'm not Birmingham, Alabama, but anyway, he said when my American friends come to visit me, he said, they always comment, where are all the English people? He didn't say white, but he's like, where are all the English people? And he said, it's so shocking. He said that there are so many Muslims in England now, in different parts of the UK. He said, there are parts of England that look like a third world country. Where are all the English people?
His
American friends want to know.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was just commenting about it. I think it was in context of, like, the Muslim deal and stuff like that. Because it wasn't necessarily said, you know, white, but that's what he was, that's what
exactly.
He
was, yeah. It was a code word.
Yeah, that's what he was saying. Where are all the English people?
Right.
And, so, I mean, people are aware. It doesn't matter if you're just a turnip farmer or sheep farmer in a little part of Hamlet of England, or whether you're a jet-setting actor, everybody knows.
Exactly.
And then there's those people that know, and then they don't care, and they're just want to continue to force the situation because they want to do anything they can to eradicate white people and Christianity.
Right, exactly. Well, and I, you know, with the huge non-white population pouring to England, of course, now England leaving the EU, I'm reading all the reports now that, you know, you got France and you got, I'm trying to think of some of the other countries that are...
Sweden.
I think Sweden. So all these countries in the EU basically like, we need to get out too.
Yeah.
Because if you have all this massive non-white population coming in.
And what some people here in the States may not realize is that all these countries that are a part of the EU, it's basically what it does is it allows a citizen in one country or a resident in one country then be able to travel freely across borders because he's not just traveling from country to country, he's traveling within the EU.
Right.
So it would be like here in the United States. Well, I can go from Arkansas to Missouri and up to Illinois or Iowa or wherever I want. I can just travel across state borders and state lines because I'm a resident or citizen of the United States. Well, over there, they consider it, all these countries, they're a part of the European Union. And so if you're a resident in one country in the European Union, you can go anywhere else. So you get all these, you get one country, or you get Greece, or you get, you know, Germany with stupid Merkel and stuff that's allowing all these immigrants to come in. Well, they get a foothold in there and get resident status, and they're able to just go wherever, anywhere they want. So the UK is like, or England's like, we're not going to be a part of your European Union, so your freaking non-white Muslim residents you're allowing to come in cannot come into our country.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think our time is up. So we appreciate everyone listening to us. Please stay tuned next week to Nice Party Roundtable. And I guess we will see you next week.
Yes. Yeah. Don't forget about Congress coming up.
Labor Day weekend is 2 months away. And so we hopefully everyone here is going to send their
registration
forms. That's what I was thinking, the registration forms.
Yep.
So, and happy 4th of July, everybody.
Yep, absolutely.
So until next time.
Independence Day.
Independence. This is Jace Robb.
And Rachel Pendergraft.
And we will see you.